Hey women! By women, I mean adult human females. There's a new event called Rise, reigniting intergenerational sisterhood everywhere, which will take place on the land, the original Michigan Women's Music Festival land, this July 30th through August 4th. Workshops will include topics in intergenerational lesbian community building, feminist and political organizing, continuing the legacy of the women's movement, and intersectional approaches. We aim to build trust through open sharing and respectful listening in this focused, intimate setting. Aside from the core programming, Rise offers the chance to bond in person with other women during concerts, dances, movies, coffeehouse, open mics, skill shares, and swaps. We each bring our energy and gifts to the land and leave with new friends, skills, and ideas. Ticket sales end on Sunday, July 21st. No tickets will be sold at the gate. Rise is for adult human females only, and all applicants will be vetted. To apply, please email Char, that's C-H-A-R, at riseontheland2020s at gmail.com. That's riseontheland, all one word, lowercase, no space, 2020, lowercase s, at gmail.com. Please tell her you heard about it on Heterodorks. That will help us learn whether this PSA is effective. Thanks!
Hey, TERFs and trannies. Haha, I beat you, Nina.
Timing. That's the secret. Timing. That's the secret to comedy.
Hey, TERFs and trannies. You're listening to Heterodorks. I'm your co-host, Corinna Cohn, a person who is ambiguous.
Yes. And I, TERFs and trannies, am your other co-host, Nina Paley, a person who is a canceled artist, unambiguously canceled, and unambiguously an artist. And we have a special guest with us today.
We do. She is Beth Bourne, who came to my attention from writing an account in Reality's Last Stand, which is Colin Wright's newsletter, which relates her ease in accessing gender-affirming healthcare through the Kaiser Permanente system, which, from her description of it, was easier to get hormones from a doctor than it was to get candy from a machine. Welcome to Heterodorks, Beth.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
And you were also recently giving testimony at the Sacramento City Council, is that right?
That's right, last Tuesday. Yeah, they had a resolution to make Sacramento the first sanctuary city for transgender people in California. So I was there speaking out.
And how did that go?
You know, when I arrived, there were maybe 45 activist types who were kind of coming at me. And at the same time, there were maybe 10 local news stations who wanted to interview me. And so if you see any of the video footage from the interviews, I look a little startled almost. But I think, you know, it was just good to have some opposition because it passed 7-0 of the 50 or so public comments. 90% of them were in favor of the idea of, you know, having this sanctuary city. But I think the 10 of us that were there speaking out, including a couple gay individuals, men, and then concerned parents like myself, I think we did at least get some people listening in the audience.
Wow. So Davis is a sanctuary city now for trans people.
It was Sacramento.
Oh, sorry, Sacramento. You live in Davis, though?
Right. I live in Davis, but because this is a blue area of a blue state, there's always other communities I can be helping out. So we had a school board member who was recently recalled for speaking out on gender ideology. So I spent the last 6 months helping with canvassing and bringing attention to try to keep her in office, but she lost her position for speaking out.
Holy crap.
Right. And you know, Aaron Reed, they did a video sort of talking about why, in this case, the trustee's name is Emily McDonald, that they had to make sure that she was silenced and, you know, would lose her position because it would set a precedent for other school board members to speak out. And so they got a lot of money across Northern California from other Democratic groups and through unions to actually campaign to have her recalled. So there's a lot of power and a lot of money coming at this gender ideology that we're seeing play out here in California.
So Sacramento is now a trans sanctuary city. So what does that mean? If like, would they give Corinna free housing if he moved there?
You know, one of the public comments from a young transgender person did say something like that to the mayor. Like, we appreciate you making this a sanctuary city, but housing is so expensive in Sacramento. And since my parents won't talk to me anymore, can you help us get housing? So it did come up. But what it means, I hope I get this correct, is that as a sanctuary city, if someone comes into our city who's looking for gender-affirming care, whether it be an adult or someone who's bringing a child in, basically kidnapping a child and bringing them into the city limits, that they can't use any city resources to help stop that gender-affirming care from happening. So
help stop it.
Yeah, so you couldn't get the police involved or city officials. It's really upsetting to me because I don't like the idea of young people being moved around for this type of thing.
I would have to assume that the population that would be most affected by a law that prohibits state actors from getting involved when in any sort of matter when gender-affirming care is a part of the formula would be children who are running away from home and who are claiming that their parents won't let them have sex changes. And this is what the city of Sacramento is saying. If you run away and you come to Sacramento and your parents report that you are missing, then our police officers won't do it. And even if they find out that you're in Sacramento, our police officers won't do anything to interfere with your child who's a runaway. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's my understanding. So it's really upsetting.
Well, this is a boon for human traffickers.
Right.
I'm in the wrong business. I should get in the human trafficking business and move to Sacramento.
You'll have a sanctuary there.
I'll have a sanctuary. You know what? The police won't do anything about it. It will be Corinna's gender and sex clinic.
Yeah, it really does seem like we're in this surreal place, Twilight Zone. Some of the comments that were being made at the Sacramento City Council last week and what people were fighting for, it was shocking to me. I didn't realize this whole sanctuary city was actually coming from the Democratic Socialists of America. They actually wrote the resolution. And so they were there pitching it. And our mayor for Sacramento, you know, he was happy to have them there. So it's sort of making these kind of radicals out of young people. And then they're pushing this gender ideology as their cause. It's surprising for me to see these elected officials going along with it, but they seem to be so captured that their brains aren't thinking anymore. Like they've fallen out of their head or something.
So at the hearing at the State House, did supporters of this, did they bring support animals and were some of them carrying canes?
There definitely was a whole cast of characters and all kinds of flags on their heads and capes and all the rainbow kind of outfits. I don't know if I saw canes, but yeah, there was a lot of looked like physical and mental health issues, illness going on. There was actually one young woman who said she was just so thankful that she had gotten her gender affirming care and announced to the city council and to the chambers that she just had her top surgery 11 weeks ago. And that she was happy. It was a Kaiser surgeon. She mentioned her name. And she said her surgeon was wearing a cap in the surgery room that was, you know, with the trans flag on it. The whole chamber just started applauding her for having this surgery. And it just made me sad. She said she had a rough time growing up and was never really accepted. And now she felt clarity. It had helped her confusion by having the surgery done. And I don't know. That idea that it's fixing your mind by changing your body, it doesn't make sense to me.
How old was she, do you think?
She was probably early 30s. So she wasn't a child or a teenager, but But to me, she was making permanent change to her body that I didn't, her reasoning for it didn't make sense to me.
You have a daughter yourself who was enticed by some of this transition idea, right?
Right. That's correct. It was starting in 2018 is really when my life kind of got, or our whole family's life got turned upside down.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So let's see. I'm 54. My daughter was 14 at the time. And she had, you know, had some mental health issues, some of them normal for that time in adolescence. A good friend had suffered some trauma in sixth grade. And I don't want to get into the details of her mental health issues, but she, along with many of her classmates, came out as transgender. There was clusters within her junior high school where girls were starting to identify as, well, mostly at this point, it was just trans, as trans boys. And so she gave me this letter kind of announcing that she wanted to use these new names and pronouns. Then a week she gave me another letter, and I didn't realize these are letters you can just download basically off the internet. But the letter said that she had done some research and she was interested in puberty blockers and hormones, and that she knew that they were safe because she had done some research in WPATH and Planned Parenthood said they were safe. And this is 2018. Hmm. So I didn't really know very much about WPATH or Planned Parenthood, their role in this. But my daughter's very intelligent. You know, she's a National Merit Scholar and a great writer. She felt like she had done some research. She provided citations in her letter to me. And, you know, I was just kind of shocked by it. And around that same time, she had to go into the Kaiser office here in Davis just for a wellness visit. The pediatrician overheard my ex-husband using he, him pronouns to refer to my daughter. And the pediatrician, her eyes lit up when she heard these pronouns. And she said directly to my daughter, "I hear these pronouns, you know, I'd like to help you out. And right now we can make a change in your records to show your new name and your pronouns." And then she said, "I want to also offer to you, we have this Oakland Proud Clinic. It's a gender clinic where you can go there and meet with an endocrinologist, a gender specialist, an OBGYN, and it's like a one-stop shop," is what she said to my daughter, "where you can meet with these gender specialists." And I remember thinking, Oakland Proud Gender Clinic. So here I am with my daughter who just has some dizziness, and we're here for a regular visit. And she says this in front of me and my daughter, and I was just so alarmed by it. And I called the next day and I said to the pediatrician, "How dare you mention to my daughter these medical options, that there's even this gender clinic available, or even to change her name and her pronouns without first consulting with the parents? I don't see how you could directly say that to my daughter without first talking to me." And she got defensive and she said, "That's just the kind of the way they do it at Kaiser." That was 2018. It could be a long story, but I feel fortunate the psychiatrist who was working with our family and our daughter, she mentioned to me that she knew of an endocrinologist, I think at UCSF, that's University of California, San Francisco, who did prescribe, actually it might've been a Kaiser endocrinologist, but either way, they met with a young person, a young teen who said they were non-binary and they were given hormones on the first visit. So the psychiatrist said to me, "You know, I don't think you should have your daughter meet with an endocrinologist. Let's first look into this a little more." And I'm just thankful there was just a teeny bit I could find on the internet. I think it was Will Malone and Jesse Singal had just written that article in the Atlantic about parents who are questioning this. But I just asked the psychiatrist if she could please tell my daughter that we won't do anything medical till she's 18. And I had the psychiatrist give my daughter the reasoning why, the loss of bone development, brain development, your bone density, possibilities with fertility. There's a few other things, you know, concerns that you would have if you started a teen on puberty blockers and hormones. And I think that was enough for my daughter and my ex-husband for us all to agree that my daughter would not medicalize until she was 18. So that did buy me some time, but it was a very hard place to be, because I still knew that this is something she wanted, and it didn't go away for many years.
What grade was she in?
So she was in eighth grade at the time. It started in seventh grade, but it was probably eighth grade.
That's young.
Yeah. A lot of the kids, they start, you know, in elementary school, there were already lots of kids that were saying they were, or at least their parents were saying they were transgender. It came into our little town probably in 2014, 2015. Kids were starting to say they were, or their parents were. And then it came into the actual, the curriculum and the policies and the surveys and the clubs, and really hard in about 2018. So that's right about the time my daughter was that first cohort of kids that were coming out as transgender as a group. Yeah. Her counselor even mentioned that they had just gone to a big LGBTQ training through the California Teachers Association a couple weeks before my daughter came out. And so the counselor felt really prepared to help with this social transition at school. It alarmed me, but I should have really pushed hard to find out exactly what the California Teachers Association was teaching the counselors at the school, but they wouldn't give me the materials. Originally, she said she would, and then they later said, sorry, we can't make that available to you.
Did your daughter end up on cross-sex hormones?
And maybe she would be a really good guest for the show, so she could share her side of the story. She appears to be desisting, so she's 18 and a half, and I don't believe she's gone on cross-sex hormones. Yes, she seems to be comfortable where she's at. And that's really why I'm here today, is because it took time. And Sasha Ayad and Stella O'Malley talk about that. There's, you know, maybe a 5-year arc where young people, girls and boys, where you'll be in this identity for many years. I just want parents or young people to just know that it can be 5-10 years before you're ready to desist an identity. And so just kind of take things really slow.
You said that she appears to be desisting. I know one of the things that a lot of parents experience, because I hear directly from them sometimes, is that they'll be estranged from their children because there are two things going on. One is that the community tells them that your family's hateful and that they're going to try to stop you and you should do everything to distance yourself from your family. That's one half of it. The other half of it is that they're trying to establish themselves as individuals. And so there's sort of this natural process of, I'm going to do what I want to, because I'm going to prove I'm different. I'm separate from you, right? So that sort of pigheadedness of stupid children. We don't have teenagers who listen to this, so I can call them stupid and I won't offend anybody who's listening.
We don't have teenagers. Anybody stupid listening to this podcast.
Oh, we do. They're not teenagers. Okay. Oh, no, we don't. We don't. Everybody listening, yeah, is lovely. Smart. Is smart. So, Nina, you keep telling me that. I keep forgetting.
Yes, that our listeners are super, super smart.
All the ones listening to this episode, yeah, are.
Not the other ones.
Right. Not the other ones. No, but the teenagers, oh my God. It makes the teenagers very, very pigheaded. I love all of our listeners. It makes the teenagers very pigheaded and very difficult to reach. And this is a nightmare for parents, because the more that you try to protect your kid, because kids will never understand this, but parents love their kids more than kids love their parents. The more the parents try to clench and hold on and protect the kid, the more the kid reacts and tries to push themselves away. So are you experiencing dynamics like that, Beth, or are you closer with your daughter?
You know, you said that so well. I mean, everything you said is exactly how I would have said it in my situation. So my daughter was 17. It was her 17th birthday when she basically went no contact with me, you know, after a family celebration with cake and presents. And she was just such a wonderful, fun person. But I wasn't surprised when she sent me a text later saying that she'd gotten her stuff and that she'd be staying at her dad's house from that point forward. So some of it is very natural, right? That individuation you would have as a 17-year-old She had a job where she made a lot of money. She's an excellent student. She's responsible. She's a driver, drives her car very well. All these leadership qualities. And so for her to say, I don't really need you, Mom, I'm just going to go live at Dad's house. And that's the other thing too. When you have a divorce situation, it's easier for a child to do that no contact and pick maybe the parent who is more supportive. And I also think it's very normal that you want to be seen by your friends as supportive of them. And if people in the town, and at this point, most people in Davis, which is a community of about 60,000 people, you know, college town, knew that I had been publicly speaking out. And so I was already seen sort of as public enemy number one in this town. And so for her to say, I'm going to go ahead and live at Dad's, seemed kind of normal for me. And I just tried to look at the bright side of it, that I knew that she would, just like you said, that it, because in my house, I wanted her to become, push her one direction. If she was not even in my presence, everything she did, she would be doing because she wanted to and not to kind of push up against me. So I think in some ways it might have worked well that this last year of high school, I wasn't there looking over her shoulder as she got dressed for school in the morning or how she decided to wear her hair or her earrings. To me, that's a big issue with kids picking these trans identities as young teens, is it becomes their whole world. Like there's, that's all they can think about is, am I passing? Am I dressing correctly? Am I checking off the next thing that I need to get done? You know, will my friends think I'm true trans if I don't do this part? It just becomes, it's a real concern for me.
Yeah. When you're young and you're doing all of that stuff, it gives you a real sense that you are doing something with your life, that you are maturing, that you are becoming a person instead of just a kid, that you're becoming an adult. Like it gives you a real framework
right.
for feeling accomplished, I've heard.
Yeah. I think that's a part. I mean, if you're in the case, a lot of these girls, at least in the clusters I've seen, they're all high achievers, people pleasers, you know, that they want to do well. And so if they're suffering from other issues in their life, this just becomes a kind of a controlling thing too. Almost like an eating disorder in the sense of like, if I keep working harder, I'm going to get towards my goal. I'm doing a good job today, because if you have an eating disorder, you're only eating a few calories at each meal. And if you're trying to prove you're true trans, you're wearing your binder and you're making sure that, you know, whatever activities you're doing or just that you're showing the world that you've got your pins, your pronoun pins on your backpack and all of that.
Beth, when you see this happening to teenagers, do you think, would this have appealed to you when you were their age?
Definitely. I mean, I don't know how it could not be appealing. I think I would say this to my sister or my mom. It's a very rational decision that my daughter made. She's very intelligent, right? She knew a friend had been sexually assaulted. She knew that she was very intellectual, like a deep thinker, and very young for her age. So intellectually mature, but socially immature. So what other way would you fit in but hang out with boys? Because they are very immature, a lot of them, but also they like to talk about things to her that were very interesting. And so rather than being caught up with the 13, 14 year old girls who were making their videos for Instagram, she got to hang out with these very bright, kind boys. I've always liked hanging out with boys or men myself. You know, I was a bike racer at both Cal Poly and UC Davis. So I always hung out with engineer guys that were bike racers. And I just liked that crowd. For me to see my daughter want to hang out with these smart, kind of nerdy-ish boys, it just made a lot of sense. And then she didn't have to deal with all the girl stuff, right? She didn't have to be beautifully made up every day and be sexually attractive to people. She could just be fun. And a lot of this was during COVID too. So she had her theater friends that were online, and then she had this group of boys that she could hang out with. That's my big concern, is that I think when the school counselors and the teachers are telling kids, yes, we're so proud of you, you're socially transitioning because you're transgender and we want to do all this, they're kind of setting it up. This is the first step in what will likely be a future medicalizing of these kids. And I think there needs to be another way of letting kids kind of explore getting to be different without giving it these terms that are used. You can see in Kaiser, you know, it's in their language of how do you affirm being transgender? And then it gives this list of social things you can do and the medical things. And so there just needs to be another way for kids to get to be different without having to say they're going to be changing their sex down the road.
I've been reading my journals from 1986 when I was 18 years old. And for years, I have thought that if transing had been an available option when I was that age, I would have done it. Now that I'm reading these journals, I'm thinking, no, not when I was 18. When I was 13 or 14, definitely, but not when I was 18. And one of the reasons is that I am or was heterosexual, and it was a purely rational thing. Like, men liked these aspects of my body that I hated, and I liked men. So it just made sense that it's like, I hate them, but I like these guys, and it's just going to be easier to attract men with this stuff. Even though if I had had the option of being a gay boy, I would have been all over that. But again, when I was younger, it's like, you're smarter at 18 than you are at 13. And of course, you're better at 25, but I think 18 would have been old enough for me to not have fallen for that. Also, I was...
Unless you fell for it earlier.
Yeah, if I'd fallen for it earlier. But it totally makes sense. Like, when I realized that, it's like, well, of course they're going for as young as possible. A lot of girls wise up by 18, a little bit. I mean, not that I was wise, but yeah. And the whole thing with, like, sexual development, like, actually starting to have some sexual experiences really does change a person. Like, I stopped being such a fag hag when I started having sexual experiences with men. And then, like, the fantasy of being a gay boy got tempered, because it's like, well, I do have some things, even though I personally hate them, I have some things that gay boys don't have, and there's a lot more straight boys in the world.
Yeah, so that's your sexuality and your gender identity. It feels to me like you can't really decide this is my gender identity until you've at least had some sexual experiences, because a lot of who you are comes from your romantic relationships with people and your physical experiences. And so that's the other problem with having these early declarations of this, I'm this gender. Well, it's like, until you've really, like, used parts of your body, you probably don't really understand what the purpose is of those parts. And you might find out there's things that you want to keep. So yeah, I'm just so opposed to all this medicalizing of young people or vulnerable adults.
So speaking of medicalization, tell us about your experiment.
Okay, well, I have to be a little bit honest here. I have some friends. I don't think I've said this on any other interviews, but I do have some friends who have kids caught in this same kind of cult, is what we call it. I don't know if I could have done this alone without their kind of support and their humor to go ahead and actually pretend to be non-binary in order to get approval to have the hormones and have the surgeries. So this started in 2022, September of 2022. And this was just a couple of weeks after my daughter was invited to a Kaiser gender expression workshop, which you probably have never heard of that. It's called the Gender Expression Workshop. And it's a pilot program that one of the chief doctors here in Redwood City, Grace Firth is his name. And he identifies as a trans woman.
Wait a second. Did you say you're in Redwood City?
That's where he is. This doctor's located.
Oh, the doctor's in Redwood City. Okay.
Yeah, he's an hour and a half away. And I don't know if I should be using she, her pronouns, but he identifies as a trans woman doctor. And he's not a gender affirming doctor. He's some kind of specialist,
Is he a doctor, or does he just identify as a doctor?
Exactly.
Affirm so, that. I mean, what? Just identify. Trans doctors are doctors, okay?
So this is a doctor, and you know, his whole story is on the Kaiser's website. So I don't feel like I'm giving information that's not already publicly available. But he came out in his 50s, midlife, that he was actually a trans woman. And it says, I think, that he was divorced, but his at least one child is supportive of him. And he felt unhappy until he met a makeup specialist, and he was transformed with clothing and makeup and hair. And so he wanted to help other people. And at first he started with other adult patients at Kaiser. But my daughter, without my permission, was invited to a teen gender expression workshop. And it was during COVID. So it was going to be every week online. And it said in the letter that she would learn how to change her voice, how to change her mannerisms, how to change her hair, her makeup, a few other things. So it's just all these things you could do to socially transition. And it said, you know, we're going to help you get over any fears you have by meeting with this makeup specialist. Right in the letter, they mentioned that you could have fears, right? But it's just a social transition.
If I could jump in, this is conversion therapy. This is literally conversion therapy.
You know, when I got the letter, I was upset by it. And you know what I did is I mailed it to Liv's a TikTok, because I knew Chaya, that she likes this kind of stuff, right? You know, here my child is invited to a workshop without me knowing about it. And I had heard from Kaiser that I would not be allowed to check out the workshop in advance, that had to have the child there. And so she blasted it on her Substack and online. I just thought that was kind of cool, right? Here, I heard back from all these people saying that's really wrong what they're doing at Kaiser. They're promoting this social transition, and we know where that's going to lead. So why are they offering this to teens? So we go forward 2 months from then. And
can I linger on that for a second? Because I want to make at least a couple of comments. How insane it is, like literally insane, that we say, oh, these are people becoming their true selves. Therefore, they need to learn how to change their voice, that they need to learn how to pick up the mannerisms or mimic the mannerisms of the opposite sex. Like, there are masculine women, there are feminine men who are just naturally like that.
Right. It's so regressive. It's so regressive, all of it, that you're trying to show girls, this is how boys act. They belch, they sit with their legs spread out, they...
Right.
You know, and it's like, no, I can do that
too.
It's
crazy. It's crazy. And the idea that you have to take these people, these young people, and train them how to pretend to be members of the opposite sex. Now, I don't believe in true trans stuff at all. But the people who were candidates for transition a long time ago did not have to. It's just crazy. It's so crazy.
Right. So after I got that gender expression workshop invitation from my daughter, a few weeks later, I received a letter from my Kaiser OBGYN letting me know that I needed to come in for a cervical cancer screening. And it said, "Dear Beth, we've got this cervical cancer screening for individuals between the ages of 21 and 65. To call in to make your appointment." And I just wrote back to her and I said, why are you using this term individuals between 21 and 65 who have cervixes? I'm like, wouldn't it be a woman that have a cervix? And she said, she wrote back, and I think it took a couple of days to write back, but she said, we put that there to be more inclusive of our Kaiser patients that are gender fluid or trans masculine, I think she said, or transgender. And when she wrote back and I read that, I at first asked if she could try to have it rewritten and include women in there somewhere. And she said she talked to her administrators and they wanted to leave it as it was. But then I said, then in this case, I would like to let you know that I'm actually non-binary and I use they, them pronouns. And please, like to talk to a doctor about getting on hormones. I think I just said hormones at that point. And within 45 minutes, I got this letter back from the head kind of doctor in the group saying that my records had been changed at this point, they wanted to help me with getting the hormones. I think that was it. So it basically took 45 minutes for them to make a change in my medical records, which is exactly what happened to my daughter 4 years earlier. But when it happened to me through email, of course, I was like, oh, this is crazy. All it takes, and I'm a 54-year-old woman, I've had two kids, I've been in Kaiser for 20 years, and all I have to say is these are my pronouns and I'm non-binary, and they change your record. And then it just, I quickly got in this, I don't know what the word is, assembly line, or, you know, it was just one step after the next. It was
to,
so
to medicalize. Did they try to sign you up to see a therapist, or did they just want to get you right on hormones?
I asked for top surgery within a couple weeks too. So I met, what I learned is through Kaiser, you have to do two mental health assessments for every surgery. So I had to do two mental health assessments for my top surgery, and I had to do two for my phalloplasty. Everything is done online, so it's all telemedicine. Even when I met with a surgeon, you know, I just lifted up my blouse, took off my bra, said, this is my, I want my top surgery.
You're committed to the bit.
Yeah. It's no.
How'd the surgery go?
I did not go in for the surgery.
Oh, not that committed.
I just postponed it. I was like, I can't really make that appointment.
Okay.
But
you had to see two therapists.
So these gender-affirming therapist appointments, they're yeah. So, it's just checking off a box. They're not really looking to find out if you have any mental health issues, because I brought up all these like crazy mental health issues, and they just basically try to talk me out of it being a concern. Yeah, for the top surgery, I brought up three really big red flags, hoping that at least one of them, they would say, you know, that might be a concern. Maybe you should talk to therapists about that. They were clear. This is not going to be any kind of gatekeeping, apologizing that they have to do this lengthy, like, well, not lengthy. It's an 80-minute appointment where they ask you some questions about what your goals are. And that's it. They keep saying, what are your goals? What are you hoping for? How can we help you? We're so glad you're here. If you're looking for attention, validation, and to feel special, you should talk to your Kaiser doctor about gender procedures, because I've never had that kind of special treatment before with Kaiser. Usually there's so many hurdles they put up to get any kind of like healthcare, but not this. This is really different.
Wow. That's even better than Crohn's disease.
Yeah. I know. I can't help thinking about people that have real health issues. And I have a friend who had a breast reduction in the last couple of years. She's also my age and had three kids and large breasted. And she went through so much back and forth with trying to prove that it was medically necessary because her back hurt, and still had to pay a large amount out of pocket. I don't know if that might be something listeners might want to consider. If there's something you want done, the Kaiser doctors, when I went in for my top surgery mental health assessment, she gave me this list of other things I could have at Kaiser. Like, she was upselling me other gender-affirming treatments. So she mentioned, besides the top surgery, they had body contouring. So I guess that's when they make your body look more male by moving.
Oh, that's what Ellen
Page
did.
Yeah, Ellen
Page
look.
Yeah. Well, she's pretty skinny to begin with, but you were. Okay, so there's the body contouring. And then she didn't mention the masculine. The facial surgeries, but I'm sure there's something they would have offered me, and I'm older, but the total hysterectomy was part of the phalloplasty that they offered me. So they refer to it as lower surgery. So there's top surgery, and then there's lower surgery at Kaiser.
I had to work really hard to get a hysterectomy 5 years ago. So it did not occur to me that it could have been a gender
affirming. You can get
affirming.
One at 18 years old. Yep. One appointment. They don't want to keep you from it has to be gender affirming hysterectomy, though. You got to put that in there.
Yeah. I'm going to have a gender affirming colonoscopy in a few months. Oh, this is just so, it defies belief. I'm sure there are a lot of people that don't believe this, but fortunately you wrote an article, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes.
And I have very details of, so I try to include lots of the emails back and forth, so you can kind of see the tone of the emails, where they're very positive and here are some other resources for you. And you should check out, they always link a couple, basically, trans activist groups in the community, right? But also the slides that they gave me to review before these appointments, if you look through the slides, they've got these crazy graphics where they have you make choices between, like for the top surgery, they have this a diagram that shows, what are your goals? Do you want to have flatness of your chest? Do you want to have a nipple sensation? Or do you want to have reduced scarring? So these are your three choices you need to make before you talk to your surgeon, right? You get kind of caught in this thinking, oh, well, I want to go completely flat. I don't really care about having any nipple sensation. So these are your goals when they don't bring up all these other considerations, right? They don't bring up the idea of like, do you maybe want to breastfeed at some point in the future? Or some of the health impacts of just having your breast completely removed. When I met with a surgeon, she made some suggestions that if you have top surgery and you're non-binary, she said you might want to have your nipples put back on, and they can use tattoos if the grafting doesn't work of the nipple tissue. But she said we can, you know, tattoo them on kind of lower and spread apart. And that's more common for, you know, to have a masculine looking chest. So they're kind of giving you these ideas of like, how to recreate your body to look a certain way. And I don't know why they don't call it just like straight cosmetic plastic surgery. That's what it should be called. And they don't refer to it.
No, it should be called queer, not straight plastic surgery, queer plastic surgery.
Yes. Well, for one thing, it should not be taking place in a medical setting, right? This is like body piercing or something. This should be something you have done like, the other thing I wanted to bring up is the copay for this procedure. The top surgery was $100 and the phalloplasty was $200.
It's crazy.
Yeah, because
absolutely insane.
Yeah. Top surgery is an inpatient. Sorry, it's outpatient. So you're just going in, having your breasts chopped off, and then you get to go home that same day. So it's only $100. The surgeons, they've got, I guess, four new surgeons here in Sacramento because there's such a demand for top surgeries, what I heard. They're billing $15,000, right? So this is going to all the members are paying for their procedures to be done because Kaiser is the insurer and the provider. The phalloplasty that I got approved for, that's only a $200 copay because it's a couple nights in the hospital. That's a $100,000 surgery. They're encouraging these patients like me, when I said I wanted the top surgery, they also mentioned, hey, we also offer you lower surgeries. And I was able to speed that up. When I originally said, after I got my top surgery approval, hey, I'd like to do my lower surgery just so I can have, and I even said this, so my top and my bottom would match. Can I get approved for that? And they said it would be 11 months on testosterone before they'd consider it. But they said they'd ask for an exception. And so they made a call to the gender clinic in San Francisco and they got the okay. So I was approved for a phalloplasty after 4 months. And that is a major surgery. I mean, it's a total hysterectomy. And then you pick your donor site. Your donor site can be your forearm or it can be your upper thigh. And if it's your forearm, this is how they explained it to me, your phallus would be smaller in diameter, but could be longer. And if you pick your thigh tissue, it would, because it's fattier, it'd be a thicker, bigger penis.
Girthier.
Yeah.
Girthier. That's the street lingo. Girthy.
Right. Yeah. I had to review all this stuff before I'd go onto these calls. And at night I would have these terrible nightmares from seeing these images of what these surgeries look like and what the donor site looks like after you've taken away that tissue. It's really,
yeah.
It's hard to get the images out of your head.
You have not quite as severe, but boys who have vaginoplasty also have donor sites to harvest tissue to make extra space inside.
I have been clenching various parts of my body that I don't usually clench and feeling protective.
Oh, good. This is the perfect time for you to be doing your Kegels, Naina.
I'm just like, I've had gender dysphoria of my own and issues with my breasts. And when I was younger, I would have gotten a mastectomy had that been an option, which it wasn't. But yeah, I'm like that whole thing with like tattooing on nipples. I'm just like, oh my God, I'm feeling very protective.
You know, and I asked the therapist, I said, you know, what would happen? The three red flags I brought up for the top surgery were that I'd been sexually abused when I was growing up overseas, which is true, on the metro and the buses, and that I had an eating disorder in college, and that my mother had suffered from body dysmorphia. So she actually did have some delusions in her 50s and was, for several weeks, she was inpatient treatment for her mental health. So I brought up all these red flags, and they still said, don't worry about it. That's in the past. And you've been sexually assaulted. We'll just make sure that the surgeon is very careful when they're meeting with you as if that's going to be enough. Oh, so I asked the gender therapist, I said, what happens if I change my mind after I have my top surgery? Can I have my breast put back on? And instead of answering me like in a direct, truthful way, she said, well, that's a good question for your surgeon. You should ask the surgeon that question. And I just thought, my God, could you imagine if you were a teen girl and that's the answer you got? Is I can't really answer that question for you.
Yeah, it's like a magic eight ball where you're supposed to shake it up and it says, ask again later.
Exactly. Right. And so you come out of this, no matter what horrific thing I brought up about why I didn't like my body and why there's mental health issues in my family, it was still like, you're a great candidate. We're just so proud of you. We want to help you on your journey. What else can we give you?
I want to ask about this idea of informed consent, because this is something that's some of my friends are interested in at this point, trying to get states to enhance their oversight when it comes to providers requiring informed consent of their patients. As you were asking about the hormones and the surgeries, did they walk you through, did they give you any handouts? And then did they walk through the complications that could happen from these surgeries with you? And did they ask you to verify that you understood what those complications could be?
Well, I guess we could start with the hormones. So that was an 8-minute appointment. And that one is actually in person. So the surgeries are all done online, except for the actual surgery. You actually have to go into the surgery room. But everything else can be done online for that. The testosterone, I've got this pump here. Anyways, it's a 1.62% testosterone pump. So this was given to me for my gender-affirming hormones. The doctor, when I came in for this, it was actually at Kaiser. And this is something I learned through a friend. I don't think I've mentioned this before, but I have a friend who was a Kaiser physician. And she said to me that within the Kaiser group here in Davis, that some of the physicians felt uncomfortable. And it was like on a private chat, having to administer cross-sex hormones to their patients because they'd never been trained in it. And they're not FDA approved. It's off-label use, right? If you're giving a woman testosterone, it's not meant for that. And so what they're doing here in Davis or in California is they find a physician within each clinic who's willing to be the gender affirming specialist. And so your primary care physician can just refer you to that person. So they don't have to be the one writing the prescription for testosterone when they know it's wrong. Yeah. So I got assigned to this other doctor. And when I met with her, I just asked her some questions like, what do you think about liver cancer? I thought there's a higher risk of women taking testosterone and liver cancer. I said, there's even a study on Kaiser's website, if you go to like their research journals, where they talk about it. And she acted like she didn't know. And maybe if I gave her some more time, she could look into it. And then I said, well, the only reason I want to go on testosterone, because I'm a pretty muscular person already, is because I want the facial hair. Do you have any other medication you could give me that would give me the facial hair without having to take testosterone? Because that's all I want. I just want to have a face that's got hair on it.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, exactly. She's like, well, I haven't gotten that question before, but I could look into that. So I guess what I'm saying is that you can bring up all these health concerns, but they basically just tell you, we're going to monitor you and we're going to make sure that you're in the safe range. And so when they looked at my blood test results, they actually showed my testosterone level being like at 16, where a typical, I guess, masculine affirming patient is like at 250. So they give you a different range than what's actually truthful for a woman body. So my testosterone is actually high for my age and being a woman, but they showed it to me as if I was a man. So it's all like made up medicine, right? They're showing me blood results that aren't factual for being female. And then when I went to the pharmacist 10 minutes later, it was $5 for my testosterone pump and less than 10 minutes for the appointment. He also said, you have to be careful with this. Make sure you're wearing a glove when you put it on. And I said, you know, right here on your Kaiser page, it says this testosterone isn't approved for women or children. And then he looked at me surprised and he said, well, but that's not, he goes, you want it because it's, I don't know what he said, gender affirming care. And I said, yeah, that's why. They're willing to make all these exceptions for these surgeries if you're saying it's because of gender affirming care. They're following WPATH or whatever. It's because they say they're following some approved like protocol. The doctors act like they're doing their job correctly. And I think a lot of them know they're not. So I don't think the consent is really there, because all you're consenting to, like for my top surgery, is that I understand there might be some scarring or infection. And, you know, might say something like, you might still have gender dysphoria. I think that's on the phalloplasty. So it's basically saying you can do the top surgery, you can have the hysterectomy, you can get the fake penis, but you still might be gender dysphoric because your hands are going to be too small and your hips are going to be too wide. If you already know at the end of all these procedures, you're still not going to be comfortable looking like a man, why are you doing any of them? There's got to be another way to call yourself transgender without trying to do something that for most people, you're never going to be satisfied with the end product, right?
Sure. Well, that's what non-binary is. Yeah. Supposed to sort of be, except the doctors are smart and said, hey, we'll give you a lollipop if you come in and have your breasts taken off.
Yeah.
So throughout all of this process, did anybody test you to make sure that you understood what the risks were or what the complications could be?
All they'd say is that, have you looked at the slides? They want to make sure everyone passes, right? They want to make sure everyone gets to the next level, because she said it to me. Well, the surgeon, and actually I shouldn't even say she, because most of the gender specialists I spoke to were non-binary. So, the surgeon who was at the workshop for the top surgery, Winnie Tong, he's actually a man who identifies as a woman, and he's the surgeon doing the top surgery. So why are there so many transgender medical providers at Kaiser talking to patients that want this gender affirming care? It seems like they have a bias, right?
Well, you can't trust the cis people. Those are the people who whistleblow. It's got to be the trans people. It's a omerta.
Right. I don't know what to say. If you have a child who's, and this is true for quite a few of these big PPOs, or I'm sorry, HMOs, they're allowed to talk alone with a doctor once they're, I think, 12 years old. And so, and all these doctors are captured. So I would actually probably advise people never to let your child go to a doctor. If you can find somebody and just pay out of pocket and make sure you're there with the doctor at the time they're talking to your child. It just seems too risky. All of it is so risky because I think they feel special, these pediatricians or gender specialists or doctors who are providing this medicine. It's not medicine, but, you know, providing these treatments.
I assume it's like this all over the California coast and I guess inland to a certain degree. Like, is Davis as trans crazy as Redwood City?
I've been looking at survey results at the high school and junior high school for communities up and down California. Colin Wright actually wrote an article for me about Davis having, I think we were at like 7% transgender. And I think the U.S. average for high school kids is about 1.5. So we were 400% higher than average. I saw San Francisco's closer to like 10% at some of the schools. Yeah, so we have higher numbers, and I'm sure we have doctors that are more likely to jump on this, but it can happen anywhere, right? You could have your kids in school and some red state at some private school, and a bunch of kids just all of a sudden find this gender stuff, and they all just start together, becomes their special interest or their common bond. And so you can get groups of kids everywhere. I almost feel like there's really no safe place as long as we allow these procedures in the U.S. And your child turns 18 before you know it. And people say, oh, well, at 18, they're adults. They should have body autonomy. You know, most people at 18 have no idea what they're going to be like or who they want to be in 10 years or 20 years. My daughter, of course, said, you know, I'm going to adopt when I get older, because she imagines she's going to walk into an orphanage and there's going to be, you know, a row of beautiful new babies and you could just pick one out. Having no idea really what it means to give up your fertility and adopt a child and not be able to breastfeed a child and birth a child. I mean, there's so many things you just can't give up as a young person until you're maybe 30, 35. Most people have no idea really what they want from their adult life.
That's why you got to get them when they're young.
I feel like that. I really do. I feel like they're promoting it. You can walk into a Kaiser office and there's the pride sign that's just right there in the doctor's office with the flag and all of that, the pronoun pins on the doctor's name tag.
Yeah, all this propaganda has really worked. All this school indoctrination has really worked and all this money put into it.
It's grim.
It is. Doing this story was super upsetting. And so I would just dread every appointment for days on end and be thankful when it was over, but it would take a couple days to kind of recover from it. I'm sure I could have done both surgeries and the hormones in just a few months, but I think it took 9 months in total to get all the approvals, which is still nothing, right? I mean, out of the blue, I say I'm non-binary and then I get approved for a phalloplasty.
Did any of your local press pick this up?
My local press, they write all kinds of articles about me being an extremist and protesting things. And there was a restraining order against me by the school district that they had to
just... What?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was a... So back in September, I went to my son's back to school night, my other child. And when I walked into his chemistry classroom, there was a Progress Pride flag. This is a chemistry class, and it was a flag. And I already was being escorted by the school principal and the deputy superintendent because they didn't trust me. And sure enough, it was his fifth class. The other five teachers were wonderful. The classrooms looked great. I was so upset to see this Progress Pride flag that I said really loud to the teacher, "You don't need this flag in your class, in this classroom." I said, "There are girls having top surgery, mastectomies at this high school, and you don't need to be promoting this." And so right then a principal came in, and there were already a couple other, I guess, kind of officials, because they knew I was going to be on campus. And they said, "We're going to call the police if you don't exit right now." And I said, "Okay, I'm taking off, but you don't need these pride flags. There's a pride flag in every classroom, just about. You don't need them at school." Of course they don't. They're distracting and they're controversial. You don't need to have pride flags.
They're religious.
Especially.
It's yeah. Religion. They're religious. It's the imposition of religion.
The teachers do it, I think, to show... It's like a virtue signaling, right? That look at me, you know, I'm so progressive. I've got this flag. A few days later, I got a restraining order. And at the same time, there had been some bomb threats because of our library event being shut down. So there were a couple things going on at one time. They're blaming me for the bomb threats, even though the librarian had shut down our event because we called men, I think we called them biological males, playing in girls' sports. And they said that was misgendering. They wanted us to refer to them as women, which would make it almost impossible to explain why you don't want to have males in women's sports. So there were a bunch of things going on. Anyways, I had this sheriff served me with a restraining order. And that took about 10 weeks before they finally dismissed it once I hired Harmeet Dhillon Law Firm to represent me. So that was good. Having attorneys who can really defend the idea that, you know, I'm just a mother who was saying, I don't want this flag in my son's classroom. Yeah. That's not
totally
violent.
Protected.
Yeah, that
completely
I'm not
completely protected.
Yeah. Of course, they had no proof that I was causing the bomb threats, right? I think they should have blamed them on the librarian for shutting down our event.
Librarian Scott Love.
Yeah, that's right. So we're going to do that event again next week, and we're going to live stream it. So I hope people will join us.
I wish I could be there.
Yeah, me too.
That would be great.
Beth, why? So you're in a, well, we're all in communities of cowards. Your courage seems really exceptional. To what do you attribute it?
Well, that's such a good question. I think probably the one moment that really made a huge difference in me realizing that I could not live with myself if I didn't speak out and fight this was going to a retreat in Scottsdale, Arizona, about 2.5 years ago. And it was Stella O'Malley and Sasha Ayad. And then it was also Lisa
Marciano yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. The three of them held a retreat over 3 days for parents who have rapid onset gender dysphoric kids. So we all had kids that were in this trans cult. And I spent 3 days listening to other parents talk about their stories. And at the time, my daughter would have been 16. So I was scared, but I had some time. But these other mothers were telling me stories about their sons who they knew were kind of autistic. One said he worked at one of the Apple stores. He identified as a trans woman and that he wanted to have all the surgeries. And another parent, they said their daughter was at UCLA and she wanted to have, she was already scheduled for her top surgery. And these parents were just, they were in tears. They were, I don't even know how to describe it. They were so sad and so scared. And I just felt like this, it wasn't right. They were loving good people and their whole world had just kind of blown up. And you know, there were other siblings that were being hurt by this and grandparents. And they just wanted their kids to get out of this. And they knew there wasn't very much they could do. And that's what we learned from Sasha and Stella and Lisa was that you might just have to grieve the loss of your child. Either they will transition and maybe some of them even will end up taking their lives because of this stuff. And that's just part of life that we have things that are really wrong in the world. And I think they gave the example of kids that die of drug overdoses, kids that can't get off of their drug addictions. But it was so sad. I was like, this doesn't make sense. We know drugs are terrible, right? But why are we going around and having the school teachers and the doctors and the therapists say this gender-affirming care is so wonderful? Have your teenage daughter come here and get her breasts cut off. And I just felt like these parents don't deserve this. And I'm going to try everything I can to possibly speak out. And then once I became estranged from my daughter, it really gave me a lot of space to do it, right? Because I'd already lost that connection with her so I could focus really hard on this. So I must spend 4 or 5 hours a day being an activist to push back on this. So I push back on the schools. I push back on the sports area. I go to a lot of sporting events and then the medical side of it.
Most people are afraid of the ostracism that happens.
Yeah.
How have you confronted that or dealt with it?
No, I did lose all my friends, pretty much. I lost maybe every single person in my running group and my swimming club and my mom's friends that I've had for 15, 20 years. Maybe, you know, like my best friend and my sister and a couple people. But at the same time, I have met so many people or had people, you know, in my neighborhood or at my workplace or made new friends who have said, you're so awesome or courageous or brave for doing this. And I am so behind you. And, you know, usually they can't speak out because they're worried about their jobs or their connection with their kids. But I just have been able to make new friends. I don't get invited to the ladies' night out anymore or the family camping trips and stuff. But I don't care. I'd rather have zero friends and know that I'm right. And I know I'm right because this isn't. Well, there's no truth behind the idea of a person being transgender. We you know, there's reality here, and you can't change your sex. And my daughter was never a boy. She had her birth certificate changed to say that she was a born male. And, you know, that's not true. So, yeah, some of it's just really unbelievable, you know, that you would tell a child that they could have their birth certificate changed. When I went to court on that, Bernadette Broyles, who's a fabulous attorney out of Georgia, she represented me on that. She wrote the argument and she did a fantastic job. And so my daughter at least read all these fantastic arguments about why you shouldn't be changing your legal documents at 15 years old. And my daughter's using a different name now, so I don't know if she will change her birth certificate to something else at some point.
There's no adults left in the room.
Yeah, that's kind of what it feels like. The courts are captured in California, the schools are, the medical establishment, and these poor children and young people that are just struggling. Anyone can be hurt from this.
I have a friend who is liberal, and we have a difference of opinion on this issue. He said that he would keep voting for Democrats even if lots of children were harmed by this, because he thinks that that's the lesser evil. And it was very difficult for me to absorb that, because this is an issue that I not only do I know intimately, but it's one that I see as tearing apart families and causing, frankly, I hate rolling this out because it's difficult to contain it properly, but there are young people killing themselves. I know of two, unfortunately, I know of two suicides that happened among youth in our community this year. And this transition stuff doesn't work out for a lot of people. The fact that people are turning their heads away from this because they have become so polarized that there's absolutely no way that they could ever pinch their nose and support a Republican, even just verbally, even knowing that children are being hurt by this, even knowing parents like yourself are being torn apart by it. It's just that the national head office is too important of an issue to open themselves up to consider that they might be completely ass backwards on this issue. It's very frustrating to me.
Yeah, and
I
try to say that I've voted Democrat for the last 30 years of my life. I'm a registered Democrat. I am not an extremist. I'm not some far right. People want to throw me in there with Trump, and I'm like, no. And I should just put a plug in right now for Democrats for an Informed Approach to Gender. It's a new group, DIAG. We've got Twitter and Facebook, and it's all these other Democrat women just like me who we know a lot about this because of our kids or, you know, what's going on. And it shouldn't be polarized like this, or political kids shouldn't be caught in this political crossfire of, if you're Democrat, you need to believe this. And if you're Republican, this is your viewpoint. So I'm hoping more Democrats, DIAG, will kind of join us, start speaking out, because yeah, if we don't have reality anymore, if women can't be protected in our spaces, and we can't teach children that you only can be a boy or a girl and you can't change that, then I just think we're lost. And also, you guys know about this, if we can't speak freely, if we can't have speech anymore, why does my local newspaper or my library or my city council, they do all kinds of promotions around there's a trans activist group in town, and they get all kinds of resources. They have the crosswalks painted in the trans colors, and they have flags put up and down the boulevard, and they have special proclamations and library events. It's all government resources that are going to push this. And then if I want to talk about my concerns, oh, sorry, we don't want that hate speech here at city council, or we don't want that in our library. So
a lot of that support is for people to prove that they're not Republicans.
Right.
Not because they believe in the issue at all, But just to signal very, very vividly, oh, I'm not a Republican. I don't want to be mistaken for a Republican. And somebody told me if I don't support this, I might be mistaken for a Republican. So I'm going to support this.
Exactly. And so everything is getting passed, you know, 5-0, 7-0. And there's no deliberation on any of this because they've already realized if I'm going to be supported by the Democrats and the unions, then I have to go along with it. So I'm not going to question anything because it would be professional suicide. Like they would never get reelected because they've said any concern. I've had previous mayors or one of the council members has taken me aside and thanked me kind of for speaking out, but they won't say anything publicly.
You should name that person.
I don't know. I just appreciate them so much talking to me. I mean, anyone who's willing to give me support, I always tell them I won't out them in this community because really they are ruthless here. It was a Katie Herzog said on some interview she did with Jesse Singal, whatever their show
Blocked
was,
Blocked and Reported,
yeah. That, yeah, the only person that's hated more in Davis than Trump is Beth Bourne. So that's how hated I am in this town. Yeah, it's, you got to have a thick skin because you will, they don't want me speaking out. And that also, though, makes me stubborn. And so I'm not going to stop.
So you're basically the village turf of Davis.
Yes. Yes. Well, Allie Snyder was here. She was fantastic. And that's actually the person who motivated me. She is just super turf. And she's been in this for 10 years. And she spoke out at a city council or actually school board meeting. And she's the one who gave me the courage, right? Because I saw somebody else do it. But she just moved to Oklahoma a few weeks ago. She's coming back, though, for our sporting event. But she's, Allie Snyder, she's the one who kind of set the bar for me of how to be a turf.
Awesome. I'm the village turf of Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, which is the Davis of the Midwest. And Davis is the Champaign-Urbana of California. But I can see that I am way behind you. You have done some amazing, courageous stuff. So my Illinois hat is off to you.
Yeah, it's been a wild 2 years here. But the undercover work with Kaiser, I hope anybody who wants to learn more about this, the medical side of gender medicine, they can see that there's no safeguarding anywhere there. It's just a, how can we help you and what can we do for you? And here you go.
Beth, I know that you have earned the admiration of so many people who you'll never even meet and they'll never even contact you. But I know that they look at what you're doing and they try to find something in themselves that will reflect all of the chances that you are taking to try to make things better. So I really appreciate it. Where can people go to learn more about your work?
Well, Colin Wright is a friend of mine. And so he did publish my article on his Substack, Reality's Last Stand. I think if you just Google Beth Bourne, my name just comes up all over the place. But I try to put things on there. I'm not much of a writer. I'm more of a doer. So you can just type in Beth Bourne. I am the chair for Moms for Liberty, which they call that an extremist group. We're just a group of moms who want to have parents' rights in the schools. That's another way you could probably find me is just put Beth Bourne, Moms for Liberty. And I'm on Twitter.
They shouldn't make the next Bourne Identity movie about you.
That's a great idea. The turf Bourne Identity, or I don't know what. We'll have to think of something. That's really good.
Well, thank you for your service.
Thank you. Thanks. Thanks for everything you do.
We need Americans like you. We need more of this in the United States.
Thanks. Yeah.
All right, turfs and trannies. All of you who we love, all of you, all the smart ones and everyone else.
Yeah. Thanks, turfs, trannies, and stupid teenagers.
But, you know, Nina, this is probably why we only have 19 listeners.
Yeah.
We get up to sometimes 4,000 or 5,000 or 6,000, and then I come and I insult the vast majority.
Yeah, all those teens that we had in our audience, they're gone now.
I wonder if the 1.5% of non-binary identified people, you know what? Actually, that might be you, Beth.
It's right. They, them, please.
Okay. Well, thank you, TERFs, trannies, stupid people, and everybody else. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to Heterodorks. You can support us by visiting our page at anchor.fm/heterodorks or by supporting Nina Paley at patreon.com/Nina Paley. You can also support us by writing a review on your favorite podcast site, such as Apple Podcasts. Thank you.